This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Hey, happy Saturday to you. Thanks for being with us, Mike Russell, alongside Dr. Mike O'Neill. We're going to break with tradition as we normally dive directly into the pressing topics of the day. But this was a big week, Doc. A lot of things happened with our Supreme Court. This tis the season, really, for the Supreme Court to start dumping their decisions upon the unwashed masses. I want to start with two, and I want to talk about two very specifically as they pertain to the great state of Arizona. Right out of the gates, the Voter Rights Act, a portion of the Voter Rights Act, was deemed unconstitutional. What was that, and why are people freaking out right now?
Part of the Voter Rights Act required preclearance. In other words, any of nine selected states, of which Arizona is one, in order to change anything relating to voting, had to get preclearance by the Justice Department. And the Supreme Court didn't directly throw that out, but in effect, they did the same thing. What they said is the data that the Congress used to decide what those states were was based on 1965, and what you have to do is to go back and use more recent data or else that's invalid. And I want to tell you, I'm convinced there is no way the Congress is going to touch that. So the effect is just the same. Preclearance is out, and Arizona just passed a whole mass of voting legislation mm-hmm. in this last session, and all of that was going to have to go to the Justice Department to be pre-cleared, and now it's not going to happen. It just goes straight into law.
So why are people losing their minds? I mean, public opinion, this is your wheelhouse. Yeah. So why are people afraid? Why are people celebrating?
Well, celebrate or depends on which side of the aisle you sit on. The okay. Republicans in this state love it because basically they went in and they jerry-rigged a whole lot of laws every which one of those changes would incrementally improve their position. This drives the Democrats bonkers, and they were going to challenge that on the basis of the Voting Rights Act, and basically they can still challenge it, but while that's in court, while that's being tested, it's now the law, and that wasn't the case before.
All right, let's switch up to the Defense of Marriage Act, which I think is probably the landmark decision that came out of this this session. Am I often saying that this was the big one?
It was certainly one of the big ones. We had a whole lot of big ones. Defense of Marriage Act is out, but there's still more to come because what the court said is that there are a lot of specific provisions of the Defense of Marriage Act that are inherently discriminatory, and those are out. The big one, however, that the court did not answer is that what do we do in the situation where gay marriage is legal in one state and you then move to another? There is a constitutional provision that says every state shall give full faith and credit to the laws of other states. But the court did not rule on the issue one way or the other on whether or not this applies to the issue of a gay marriage that is licensed in, say, Massachusetts or Rhode Island, and then you move to Arizona, which does not recognize gay marriage. That is an open question. So as the Supreme Court often does, they decide these things on as narrow a ground as possible, leaving open the grounds for further litigation. And in Arizona, I'll bet you one other thing is coming. In 2014, I'll bet you that we see an initiative to legalize gay marriage in the state of Arizona, and that's going to have a real chance here.
I think if you're
movement on that issue is very rapid in public.
Right. I think the wave's coming. I think if you're against it, you're on the wrong side of history at this point. It's going to happen coast to coast.
But in the interim, what we're going to have is legal gay marriage in a lot of blue states and illegal in a lot of red states.
We had a few weeks back, former law dean of the law school at Arizona State and a former Supreme Court law clerk on.
Yes.
If you want to catch that show, all of our shows are being podcast directly on the KTAR website. You can go back and listen to that. We're also talking about the voter registration laws as well. Very insightful stuff. But today I want to dive into homelessness as it pertains to right here in the great state of Arizona. Now, Dr. O'Neill, you brought this up as a potential topic to talk about. Why is this important to you?
Well, I think maybe I'll let our first guest, Mark Holleran, is executive director of the Central Arizona Shelter Services, and I'll let him answer that question. Why should we be concerned about homelessness, and how big an issue is it in this? How big a problem is it in the state of Arizona?
Thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here. This is a big issue. From a humanity standpoint, we do have a responsibility of taking care of everyone that lives in our community. And sometimes it is not their fault, sometimes it is their fault, but just like you watch out for your children, it is to you, to everyone's collective best interest that everyone is taken care of in the community. And our customer base includes people that are seriously mentally ill, that have long-term health conditions, have long-term correctional histories, have a combination of that, may have substance abuse problems, alcohol problems, they're unemployed. It typically is a combination of issues, and many of them don't have that support network that the basic family unit provides. Mm-hmm. And so we become that support network.
Now, you, according to your website, house about 1,000 people a night. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have a few different sites. We serve mostly men, but we have a separate family shelter in North Phoenix. Our numbers have come down, believe it or not, over the last 5 years. And that almost seems counterintuitive, but we have really sort of ramped up our efforts in the creation of affordable housing. And that movement, which has been proven on by pilot programs throughout the United States, it works. And actually, if you do it right, it costs less to provide the affordable housing than it does to run the shelter.
So you think we're making incremental progress?
Absolutely, we are making incremental progress. Now, a lot of issues can be created that can complicate this. You mentioned just previously things about other states. And so sometimes we get individuals delivered to us from out of state. And so there's an ebb and flow here that sometimes is very difficult to understand. But for the most part, most of the people that we serve are from Arizona. Many of them just recently are first-time homeless, and basically are homeless because they lost their jobs and have been unemployed for an extended period of time.
Now, you said, or I said, you serve about 1,000. About how many do you think are served by all of the other agencies that are out there? And how many people, in ballpark terms, are being missed entirely that are actually out on the street?
We perform on a community basis counts, and there's some statistical analysis. But we estimate somewhere between 10 to 14,000 homeless at any point in time in Arizona. A majority of those are in Maricopa County and Pima County. I would say probably half of those are being served in shelters, and the other half, there's probably a couple thousand on the street, and the rest are doubled or tripled up or with other friends, or they're not so clearly evident, but they don't have their own place yet.
Okay, well, we have coming up after the break a really interesting guest. He happens to be the mayor of Phoenix, but intriguingly on this subject, he spent a period of time voluntarily homeless in order to get a firsthand view of this issue and what it feels like and how these agencies work. And we will have back with us Mayor Mark Stanton.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Never, ever think we shy away from the tough issues of the day. We're talking homelessness, and we have a guest on. You might have heard of this guy. He's the Phoenix mayor. Mayor Stan, thanks so much for joining us.
I am happy to be here.
Mayor, this is Mike O'Neill. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I remembered when we scouted out the topic of this show being homeless, I remember several years ago when you were on the city council where you voluntarily went homeless for a period of time in order to experience what that was like in the city of Phoenix. And I wonder if you could share with us in a few minutes what you learned and what it felt like.
Sure. And I was chair of a committee called the Continuum of Care, which is a policymaking committee about how to improve policies relative to ending homelessness in our region. But I was challenged to actually try to experience it. You can't fully experience it, obviously. I mean, I could always pick up my cell phone and call my wife, if you will, and have her come pick me up. So you can't fully experience it, but at least get a sense of what a person who is experiencing homelessness goes through. I stayed at the overflow shelter at Cass. I did have a gentleman who had been homeless for a while that kind of knew the system, that was kind of like my guide. He didn't know I was an elected official. He thought I was a rookie homeless person, if you would, who was going through some tough times and needed some support as I was experiencing homelessness. And I tell you what I learned. I learned that the time is a whole different spectrum for a homeless person. I mean, my partner had to wash some clothes that day, and washing clothes involved getting on a bus, which takes too long to start out with, going to the laundromat, putting in the clothes, waiting around, and coming back. That, you know, that takes up almost a full day. Things that we take for granted that are so convenient in the life of a homeless person can be a huge challenge. Just getting to a doctor appointment can be a huge challenge. And so as we adopt public policy dealing with the homelessness, we need to be cognizant of the unique challenges that people experience and homelessness go through.
So you're now in a position to impact policy. In terms of what your experience was as a quasi-homeless person, what do you see differently? What specific recommendations would you make as a result of that experience?
Well, we've learned a lot, and my general philosophy is that we owe our policy-making process as it relates to human services and homeless the same level of sophistication as we do in any other area, whether it's transportation, water quality, et cetera. We owe the same level of sophistication in adopting the appropriate policies for helping people in need. Number one, City of Phoenix has changed our policies relative to housing vouchers, for example. No longer are people who have been on the waiting list the longest getting housing vouchers. Instead, we give it to people most in need, people that are in crisis, people that are experiencing homelessness, get them off the streets and into a more permanent setting as quickly as possible. We also have adopted the philosophy of housing first, which means someone who happens to be homeless and may have a substance abuse issue of various sorts, that shouldn't be a reason to deny them housing. That should be a reason to get them into housing and get them the services on site that they need. We've learned over time that that's the best way to end the cycle of homelessness, is to get someone off the streets as quickly as possible into a permanent setting with the support services to go along with it. And that's kind of a new model, a new way of thinking, and I as mayor and the City of Phoenix have adopted that approach.
Now, I want to ask one question that really, to me, I think confronts the dilemma that as mayor you may face, and that is this. From a moral standpoint, this seems like a very, very good thing to do. But the dilemma, I think, for any one city like Phoenix is, if Phoenix becomes known as a place that does an especially good job of dealing with the homeless, might not Phoenix then, as a result of that, attract more homeless people?
I mean, that is, you are absolutely right. But what's the alternative? Not to provide high-quality services for people in need? Because we know that someone that experiencing homelessness is often someone that spends a lot of time in hospital emergency rooms, is often a person that may have a greater interaction with the criminal justice system. It's expensive for the community as a whole. And although it may be a little costlier on the front end to get that person housing and support services they need, in the long run, it saves our community a great deal of resources. And it's an issue that I believe in, and I know others who work in homeless believe in, that the issue of ending homelessness in our region is a regional issue. It's not just a City of Phoenix issue. And I call upon other cities in the Valley to do more, not just donate money to Central Arizona Shelter Services, but to actually allow for quality housing in their facilities and services in their cities to help on this issue. It truly is a regional issue. And yes, it's a frustrating thing, but you know what? We're the big city, and we got to step up to the plate and do more.
That's where, actually, I wanted to go, was this same issue within the metropolitan area. We're all familiar with Central Arizona Shelter Services, which is in Phoenix. How good a job do the other communities within the Valley do on this issue? Or is Phoenix basically carrying the ball for the entire community?
Phoenix carries a disproportionate ball. There are, Mesa's doing some good work. Tempe's doing some very good work. And I'm not going to single any city out for not doing particularly good work. I just challenge every city to look in the mirror, learn what these other cities are doing, and say, is writing a check to CAS, because most of them do write a check to CAS to help with their some of their budgetary issues, but that's not enough. In fact, we have found, to be perfectly honest, where we have put high-quality permanent housing for people who are experiencing homeless to get them off the streets, in many cases, you drive by, you can't. It looks like a first-class apartment building. You can't tell the difference, and in some cases, it's actually gone on a place that was blighted. It actually added value to that community. So all of us need to get over whatever negative stereotypes that we have, and be willing to allow our communities to be a place to provide services. This is a regional issue, and I would politely argue it's a regional opportunity. What I mean by that is, you know, when you take someone off the streets, get them the help and treatment and housing that they need, that person's going to turn right around and be a fully productive member of your community, fully employed, paying taxes, et cetera. And this is not just, you know, happy talk. CAS and others have seen case over case where someone was middle class, fell on hard times, ended up homeless, got the help they need, and they're back in the middle class later on in life. That is a common story, and we need more of it.
Now, how are we doing now? I remember years ago when CAS located down on West Washington, there was a lot of flack from neighborhood merchants and others, the old NIMBY phenomena, not in my backyard. I moved this somewhere else. How are we doing right now? As mayor, I assume if there are community objections to these centers, you're the guy who's going to hear it. How are we doing on that?
Well, I can't speak to the past times. I can only speak with my working relationship with CAS and the whole Human Services campus in west of downtown. A significant amount of resources have been put in that campus. It is not a blight on the neighborhood. It's done in a way that that I think is number one, compassionate. Number two, provides the incredible level of service and helps the people in need. I think in general, the facility has a good working relationship with the neighbors. They have a good, strong, close working relationship with Phoenix law enforcement. That's one of the untold stories of how we're dealing with homeless now, is that many of our officers are trained so that when they run into someone who happens to be homeless, that they understand that maybe that person needs treatment, not to be put in behind bars. We save a lot of money by having trained officers that know the social services and take them to the right spot. Look, it's not a panacea. We have a long ways to go, but it's a much better situation than it used to be.
I have one last quick question, and we're running short on time here. Homelessness in Phoenix seems to me more invisible than in some places like San Francisco, where you see open panhandling and the like. Why is that the case? Are we more aggressive in enforcing laws on that?
I can't speak to that issue. I mean, we are a little less urban than San Francisco. We're getting better downtown, and we're going to continue to go in that direction. But we're spread out, and I think homelessness tends to be a little more spread out. But we still have thousands of people that are living on the streets, and you know, we got to make sure that we're doing our part. Meaning, in our city parks, people should not be sleeping. That's not the location for it. Someone who's homeless should not be staying at a city park. They need the help and services that CAS and other facilities can provide them.
Mayor, I'm going to have to cut you off. I do appreciate you joining us. We are up against a hard break here. Mayor Stanton, thank you so much. When we come back, more from Mark Holleran, Executive Director of CAS. This is 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Thanks so much for being with us. We are we're talking homelessness today, and we just had the mayor on. Why do we have the mayor on? Because we're the think tank, and we that's how we roll. We had the mayor on talking about his time in I think you put it, Dr. O'Neill, a quasi homeless person.
Well, when you've got the cell phone in your pocket and you know that it can end, you have to admit that the experience is never going to be completely.
I think that was an appropriate way to say you had an out where homeless people do not have outs.
And by definition, if you're homeless, you're homeless because you don't have an out. Our guest is Mark Holleran, the executive director of Central Arizona Shelter Services, the largest houser of homeless people in the metropolitan Phoenix area. I wanted to ask you a very specific question, Mark, and it relates to kind of the incentives in an organization like yours. And this comes from a discussion I had some time back with a fellow who ran a shelter in the South Bronx. And he told me that one of the biggest frustrations he had was that the funders who funded his organization were interested in body count. How many meals did you serve? How many people did you house? And that's an admirable goal. But what he also expressed was that you see this sort of massive humanity walking in for a meal or a bed. And he said that, you know, a lot of these people have long-term problems. They've been at it for a year. And you can ameliorate an immediate situation, but every once in a while, you'd see somebody, and usually it'd be a family, and they'd stick out like a sore thumb, and you knew that they were awkward, they didn't belong, and you knew that you could do something to significantly impact their lives, but it would require a greater level of effort, and that wasn't going to excite the funders who wanted to know how many thousands of meals that you serve. What's your... does that resonate with you? And do you do anything? Are you able to identify people that can be helped in a more significant way?
We do work on that, and sometimes the stories are very much heart wrenching. What we try to do now is at least not respond by saying it's just one size fits all. You come to the front door, you all get in line, you go through the same thing. If we can identify individuals that would just need a small, perhaps, financial stipend to get them out, and that would prevent them from even getting into the system, we try to operate in that way. Because a lot of we do serve a fair number of people that if we could otherwise divert them, they would never have to experience that homeless condition. You know, sort of like as an analogy, you don't want to wait till all the wheels come off the car. You know, if all you had to do is fill up the tires just a little bit, but the car could keep going, that's what you want to do. And so we try to be mindful of that. Also, when I first started at CAS, just nights of lodging, numbers served, those were outcomes. Now those are outputs. Now the outcomes are how many did you move out and how many stopped their homelessness? And that's harder to do. It's
more expensive.
It is, but it's a better measurement. If you're just cycling people back and forth in the system all the time, you're not ending homelessness. And our mission truly is to end homelessness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my background, I don't mean this in any sort of pejorative way, but I'm a recovering CPA. And so I get the business part of it. And there are a lot of really, really good nonprofits out there right now serving wonderful causes within the community. There is a tightening of resources, and so the people that have the resources say, okay, I'm going to invest my dollar, but where will I get the best payoff for my dollar? And so it has forced us in a very positive way to more clearly delineate what our investors are investing in. And when they give us the money, this is what they get, and this is how we can tell them.
Let me clarify real quickly. You mentioned our goal is to eliminate homelessness.
That's right.
It seems to our listeners as world peace.
Sure.
We need to, you know, is it unattainable? Is it attainable right here in the Valley to end homelessness? If so, how do we take logical steps to make that happen?
I think we can significantly eliminate homelessness. It's like we can improve people's health conditions, but you're always going to need hospitals because things are always going to happen. I just think we have a lot more people in the homeless system right now that as we get better at what we're doing, we can shrink that number that we see on an ongoing basis just because people do become unemployed. They lose their homes. Things happen. And we're always going to face that. But I think we can take this backlog that we've created over the years and shrink them down to a very, very manageable number.
So if you were to want the public that's listening in to have one major takeaway from mm-hmm. what you're saying about what we ought to be doing as a community, what would that be?
Well, it'd actually be two things, and one of those the mayor mentioned. First, homelessness is a regional problem, and so we need to develop a regional solution. That doesn't mean that we want emergency shelters in everybody's communities. Matter of fact, I hope we don't build any more shelters. But developing a regional solution is absolutely critical here. And the mayor really has been sort of front and center on trying to push this forward. How do we do that? Affordable housing. And with the mayor and the city council's support, In the last 2 years, through one of our subsidiaries that we have, Arizona Housing, Inc., we've added 500 units of affordable housing.
Now, what are, in the Phoenix context, what does affordable housing mean? Are we talking new construction, public housing? Are we talking units in existing apartment buildings? Are we talking single-family homes? Are we talking about buildings that already exist? Are we talking about construction?
Yes.
To all of that?
All of those. But our particular model is, I can't do anything one at a time. So we serve so many people. We're going to serve 6,000 unduplicated men, women, and children this year alone.
What is unduplicated men and women?
That's sort of a trade term.
Okay.
And that's a good question.
Thank you.
That means if we see you several times during our year, we just count you once.
Okay.
Okay? Because we think that that's the fairest way to do this. Because of the economy and because of foreclosures, we took lemons and made lemonade. And we were able to get stimulus money through HUD. We acquired three properties that allowed us to take those very distressed properties.
These are multifamily properties.
Multifamily properties mm-hmm. that are scattered throughout Phoenix that, at the time, had all kinds of, let's call them business activities occurring in these facilities. All these facilities were very much well known by the police department because of the activities occurring. They were very distressed properties. We bought these properties using this stimulus money. We renovated these properties.
So did you clear them out completely then? The existing tenants were moved out
or not? We told them, here's what the rules are going to be. And many of them moved out, but then we renovated around them. And if you went by these properties now, you would have no idea that we're the ones that operate these facilities. Now, what makes these different is, for the most part, we have staff on site 24/7. So we have eyes, single point of access into the facility. We know who comes on to the site, who goes off the site.
I think the image that most people have, the scary image of this, is not to create public housing with all of that awful.
You would not. This is more like a gated community. Staff on site all the time. We have supportive services there every day, usually around 10 hours a day. And so this is a very supportive environment. This is why it works. And the cost to us in total is probably in the neighborhood of about $500 a month per person, which is far less than alternatives, including the shelter system. And so I think identifying properties throughout all the cities and towns in the Valley of the Sun actually would make a lot of sense. We've created jobs because of the renovations that we've had to do. We've been able to document that crime is down in all the areas that we have put our properties into.
Well, we'll be back in just a minute to wrap this up. KTAR 92.3 News Talk.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
All right, thanks for being with us. We want to thank Mayor Stanton for stopping by and sharing his experience as Dr. Mike O'Neill said, a quasi-homeless person. It was very enlightening. Obviously, he's been to that level. He can speak to that level. And continuing with us is Mark Holloran, the executive director of CAS, that's Central Arizona Shelter Services. Now, in the break, Mark, you mentioned the difficulty with placing someone into housing and then working on issues.
That's correct.
But you see amazing results when it actually works in that order.
And it almost seems counterintuitive, but when you do take that chance, get somebody into that housing, and then it's absolutely essential to wrap around very intensive supportive services, the pilot programs throughout the United States, and this has been tested throughout the United States, show that there are success at doing this. They've been able to show individuals in New York and San Diego where they've been chronically homeless on the streets, and they've been able to document the nights that they spent in jail, the nights they spent in the ER or in hospital beds, and the community, because they didn't do anything, spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars just as a result of not paying attention.
I think what I heard you say in the break and I started to amplify here is that if we were to take an example of a person who, say, has a drug addiction, the traditional approach to this, if I understand you correctly, would be to say, you got to clean yourself up or we're not going to house you.
That's correct.
And I think intuitively, having you heard you speak to the data, is there's not a real good chance of somebody to clean themselves up when they're out on the street.
You could talk with a lot of families right now that are in housing, probably dealing with a family member that have been waiting for a long time for that to happen. Until that person wants it to happen, you can wish it all you want, but nothing's going to change. However, if we get them into an environment that they have their own place, this is beneficial for everyone involved, and actually ultimately will provide a proper environment that will improve your chances of success. Life is tough when you're in a congregate shelter.
And it can be tough to deal with a drug addiction, doubly so, I would think.
Yes, it could be, because, you know, on our campus, we'll have up to 1,500 people on the campus during the course of the day. And there are a lot of people there looking for help, and there are predators that are lurking about that you don't know. Just as if you were in a shopping mall. There are people there shopping, and there are people there that are watching, and you don't know who's who.
Now, at the same time, you mentioned that in some of these multifamily unit centers that you're running, you say, we have rules. What kinds of rules are there?
Well, in our housing, we actually have landlord-tenant relationship. Somebody signs a lease, we hold them to the lease, and we utilize a property management company that manages like 8,000 units of housing in Arizona. So we've run it as a business. But then our supportive service team is there to say, okay, your tenant may fall back every now and then. They may make bad choices. The first response is not to kick them out and put them back into the shelter environment. Let us intervene, and then we'll work with them and help redirect their efforts so that we keep them in their housing. And ultimately, you get a better result, and it's ultimately going to cost the community less money to do it that way.
Now, what does get – I assume there's some red line somewhere. What gets you kicked out?
Well, we will not, because we've made commitments to the neighbors, and we've been very open with the neighbors and they with us. And we've made certain commitments. We do not serve sex offenders. We do not serve people who are arsonists. We don't serve people who are violent offenders.
So basically, this is to deal with the neighborhood issue.
You bet. You mentioned NIMBY issues before.
Sure.
And when we first started this, neighborhoods were thinking, well, you're just going to move the shelter environment to our neighborhood. No, you're not going to do that. We said, no, this is totally different. We're going to have a landlord-tenant relationship. We will comply with state law in that regards. We will be a good owner. If you have issues, come to me. We will be a good owner. You'll be glad that we came to the neighborhood. So in our communities, we're the neighborhood block watch center. We actively pursue our neighbors. They come in. We've been very open with them, and we have, I think, lived up to our commitments. We have the support of the affected city council member in the different districts, and we're in different districts. And I sat down with them, and I said, okay, this is what we'll do. And they said, okay, Mark, we'll let you do that, but you better deliver, because this is important. And we have done that. And so now I'm hoping that we will get support for further developments.
So how many discrete physical locations are you in, and approximately where are you?
Well, on the housing side, we have 4 multifamily apartment complexes. We have an 84-unit facility that was a former Del Webb Motel on Grand Avenue. We're up at about 19th Avenue in Peoria. We have a 72-unit facility up there. We're at 35th Avenue in Peoria. We have an 80-unit there. And then in downtown Phoenix, we have a 300-unit facility.
Now, one of the things you said earlier was that two things. One is you would like more support from communities other than Phoenix, but at the same time, you also said that you're not interested in building an additional shelter somewhere other than the Phoenix facility.
That's right. Shelters don't end homelessness. Housing ends homelessness. We've seen it. We've been able to connect the dots here as we've done this housing. Our numbers have started to come down. This makes sense. The environment is totally different. If you drive by our apartment complexes, you would just drive by. You would never see them. If you drive by our shelter, you're going to know it.
Okay, so you could see moving multifamily unit, actual housing units, into other communities, and I gather would like to.
Yes.
But not a shelter.
No. Matter of fact, our goal is hopefully, well, I won't say my personal goal here is, because we don't romanticize what we do. Okay, but I think we could shrink the numbers at CAS dramatically if we're able to create several more multifamily projects throughout the community. Again, this is a regional problem. What we're promoting is a regional solution. And I'm hoping that I think communities will respond differently when they see how we operate our multifamily apartment complexes versus how we operate the shelter.
So what is that ratio now? If I remember, you have 1,000 people a night in the shelter. Right. How many do you have in all of these other places put together?
When you add up all the family members, we have 700 to 800 people now in the housing.
So it's approaching 50-50 at this point.
It is.
And your goal is to get that, I assume, as far down that ratio as you can.
Yes, and I think we can drive those numbers down to where, you know, we have effectively ended any sort of longer term type of homelessness. But we're always going to need that. I need a place to stay tonight. I don't know where else to go. I need a place to stay.
So how do we stack up as a community overall compared to other?
Well, you mentioned,
I assume there's best practices in associations and all that. How
you touched on it with the mayor, with like San Francisco and Washington D.C. and New York. I'm encouraged with what we're doing in Arizona. I don't think Arizona has taken the credit that it should. I will tell you that there are people at HUD that are certainly aware of the projects that we're involved with, and they have been very supportive. We have delivered on just about everything we said we were going to do. Will this draw people in from other communities or out of state? You know, when I first started at CAS, we would see a lot of people coming in from out of state. I guess I don't get that sense anymore.
You get this. Most of the people you're dealing with are indigenous Arizonans.
I think so. But I think as we develop these regional solutions, I don't think it would hurt for us to talk with Las Vegas, maybe L.A. and San Diego. Mm-hmm. There's sort of a quadrant there. I remember being in San Diego once. I was on the beach, and a guy walked up to me and said, "You're Mr. Holleran, aren't you?" And I looked at him, and I said, "You have me at a disadvantage." He goes, "You run the shelter in downtown Phoenix, don't you?" And I said, "Yes." He says, "I used to be there. I'll probably be there later this year." So something we should look at.
Well, that was in the summer, I gather.
Yes.
There's a lot of us go to San Diego in the summer.
Right. Mark, one of the most touching things you said at the very beginning, you mentioned that we need to treat homelessness and a homeless person as a community, as if they are children, as a parent, as a father. I wouldn't turn my back on my child no matter how many bad choices they make or how much mental health issues they might have. And we need to take care of them as our own kids. And you're doing great work over there at the Central Arizona Shelter Service. We thank you so much for joining us. Homelessness is a big issue. We're tackling it head on right here in the state of Arizona. Thanks so much for being with us here this week. 92.3 KTAR.